Yeah, I also just never know how to respond to it. I'm like, I don't know, it's like 9:30 and I've had a couple of White Claws. Like, leave me alone.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and we have not just the first game of the season to talk about, but a victory that was never in doubt. I am joined by our usual panel of Ben Daniels, Brian Ashlock, and Reno Wallabout, and we're all here to talk about the game. Rob, let's start with you, because you watched my totally rational reactions to this game live and in person at Flannery's in New York. Was this an easy win or something a little more difficult?
Judging by the death threats that you were screaming at the television,
I would never assume that
it was in fact quite an easy win. And no one was ever worried. And if you look at any of the stats or the highlights, it sure looks like it was pretty easy, doesn't it? It was not.
It's one of those games where after the fact it all feels very easy, and certainly we were on top, but I don't know, we could see Davila in like the 7th minute, I just feel like, or whatever, the 11th minute, whatever it fucking was, I just felt like, God, I've seen this fucking movie before, and I was getting very negative about the game, and I probably shouldn't have been, because frankly, that was probably the best chance Villa created all game, and we were really squeezing them, after that, and certainly by the end of the first half, we were starting to really put the screws to them. And in the second half, I think we completely had them on the ropes. But I don't know. It felt like a very dumb game that we would drop points in for a very long time to me.
I mean, if you thought Tottenham Hotspur were going to come into the first game of the season and just dominate right out the gate, then I don't think you've been watching this team.
It would be nice.
We were always going to concede that dumb goal in the first 15 minutes.
It just would have been nice to, like, we had such a great window. We had a perfect window. If we just could have blown the doors off a promotion team, like, it just would have been very nice to, like, as a change of pace.
And I mean, we kind of did, though. Like, you know, look, it wasn't.
We eventually did. You're right. We did.
It wasn't 5-0 and it wasn't 4-0 or, you know, whatever. But it in the end, like, that's a good result.
It was a deserved scoreline.
We outshot them 31-7. But it took us until like the 75th minute to finally make the breakthrough. So, you know, I get we've seen many games where we pepper a goal and make a bullshit goalkeeper stand on his head and make saves all game and not get a result. Like, we all know how that movie goes. But you know what? This is a new Tottenham Hotspur with a new Tottenham Hotspur midfield. And we're great. And it was never in doubt.
I think that's an important thing not to lose sight of, Ben, in that, like, we did look very good, especially in our midfield, all game. Now, you could argue that, you know, Villa got their early goal, so they weren't as adventurous, and they were holding on to that lead till it was fairly deep, so when we did score, it kind of broke their back. But I still think that was a much more assured midfield performance. And again, it's Villa, but that was a much more assured midfield performance than I think we saw all of last year, or virtually all of last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's telling that, you know, arguably the man of the match was Harry Winks, who went off in like the 60-something minute for Christian Eriksen before we had done anything in terms of scoring. But, you know, he looked phenomenal at the base of midfield and defended well and recycled possession well and just kept the ball at our feet and allowed us to keep piling on the pressure. And, you know, it's unfortunate, I think, for him that we didn't have the breakthrough until after he went off the pitch, because, you know, he was very good and we were still good before that goal finally came.
But I think this is an element of, Greg,
not to step on you here, but I kind of have to disagree about that. Like, I guess playing that lineup in that formation, we eventually would have scored a goal, like, if we just kept playing into infinity. But, like, bringing on Eriksen and changing from the diamond formation that they started in to more of a 4-2-3-1 with guys playing a little bit wider, like, made a very noticeable difference basically immediately.
It absolutely did. But I think, you know, the chronology, I think, is getting a little bit lost. Like, I mean, Eriksson was great when he came on and was creating tons of chances, and obviously the shift, moving Lucas and Lamella wider and not kind of all up in Harry Kane's space, definitely allowed us a little more penetration. But I think before that, I mean, Harry Winks did such a great job of just letting us pile pressure onto Villa, and in a way that I think forced them into a bunker that we were then able to exploit by the time we brought on Eriksson. I think, you know, before that, I mean, we were still playing well, you know, and I think we could have made that same tactical shift without Eriksson and just shifted Ndombele forward and moved Sissoko back into midfield and, you know, spread those forwards wider. And I think we still would have gotten the breakthrough. But, I mean, you're absolutely right that Eriksson coming on changed the game in a way that broke Villa wide open.
I don't want to get on, I want to stay on Harry Winks for a second, because I think what we saw in this game is a benefit of signing these new midfielders that we really hadn't talked about, or I really hadn't seen anyone else talked about, which is, I think we let Harry Winks play his game for the first time in a very long time, and we weren't asking him to do things that he probably shouldn't be doing. We weren't asking him, and I think he can be a little bit more progressive than we saw from him, but we clearly had him in a hold on to possession, recycle the ball, you know, distribute it to more attacking players who are going to take it up the pitch. And I thought he was great at it. Again, it's Villa. We shouldn't read too much into that. But I just think with a more complete midfield, we're just going to have less and less asking guys to do things that maybe they aren't as good at.
Yeah, in his defense, he was getting the ball to the team's attacking players. It was the team's attacking players who couldn't do a goddamn thing with it.
And how much of that is Villa just started packing it in because they scored their goal? And how much of it was, we need a slightly more incisive system? I don't know.
Yeah, we need to not give the ball to Sissoko in the attacking zone.
At all, I believe, is the other words you're looking
at. Right. As much as that tactical shift helped our attack flourish, and also pulled Sissoko much deeper, which is, you know, really the only place that he thrives, is kind of in transition from defense to attack. And, you know, that's where he got his assist for the third goal from. That's where, you know, he's stopped being involved in and around the box for the most part.
It's where he looked good. Because when he just gets the ball and starts going forward, you can see it. He's not overthinking it. He's doing what he's good at, which is sort of just blowing through guys, using his physicality. But you saw it when they were expecting him to sort of do things in the final third earlier in the match. And you could just always hear the gears turning in his brain and him just locking up, like when he had that awful shot that wasn't a cross. Sorry, Vince. And, you know, like a couple other things. He's just taking, at a minimum, he's taking too long, putting aside the quality of the pass or the shot. He's just taking too long to make the decision, where you look at someone like Kane or Eriksson or even Lucas Moura, who just, even if they don't make a great decision, they're not giving anyone time to sort of get themselves set. They're making the call, and Sissoko just doesn't have that kind of decision-making in the final third.
Yeah, I think, to keep talking about Winks, because why not? You know, the way we look like we're setting up a lot this season is going to be in this diamond midfield, with probably Ndombele and Lo Celso on either side of Winks, if Eriksson he stays in front of them, and if not, Lamella, Dele Alli, or whoever's fit. And, you know, since Wanyama and Eric Dier both came down with chronic, unspecified injury concerns that will keep them out forever, you know, we've really lacked a solid presence at the base of midfield. And I was very concerned that Harry Winks was going to be able to do that for this team. And I know it was just Aston Villa, but I thought in this match he definitely showed that he had the tools to do the thing a deep central midfielder needs to do.
He had that great move where he made that last second slide tackle to sort of keep it from being another one-on-one, and then he does like a full spin to pick up the ball and go around another guy. It was, I'm not sure, maybe he should have been in a better position, but it was pretty impressive in the moment.
Also the only tackle he made in the entire game.
It was, but he had another moment where he didn't make a tackle, but there was a 2-on-1 counterattack, and he shepherded the two of them into a corner that so that they couldn't get a shot off in a way that was, like, really smart heads-up defending. You know, he was very calm. He didn't just, like, rashly throw his body at the ball. You know, he forced the guy on the ball wide. He cut the angle so they couldn't make a pass and allowed help to come back and finally, like, stifle the play. And it was just really smart defensive midfielder play from a guy who hasn't necessarily shown he has the defensive chops to do that. I don't know. It was very encouraging for me.
Yeah, I think it's the best I've seen Winks look in, I don't know, since that Madrid game. I mean, and I know injuries are a big reason for this, but I was, again, it's Villa, first game of the year, but I was very impressed.
Yeah, I would say at least until he came off the pitch, he was the best player on it. And then once he came off, we maybe looked a lot better. I don't know that it's necessarily his fault.
Well,
but boy, how about Christian Eriksen?
Well, so how much of that improvement was down to Christian Eriksen and how much of it was down to just like what that shift meant? Like you said earlier, Ben, we were getting some more players wide. I mean, obviously Eriksen had an impact, but at the same time, putting him on was changing the way we were playing a little bit. And I think it was more than just Eriksen's play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. I mean, he created 3 chances in a half an hour, took 3 shots. You know, he was very heavily involved and was clearly pulling strings in the attacking third. And again, at that point in the game, we were pretty well camped out around their 18-yard box. And, you know, if there's anybody on Spurs you want pulling the strings at that point in the game, it's Christian Eriksen. He's the guy who can find the passes, pick the through balls, unlock defenses. And, yeah, he did a phenomenal job of that. But I think in the first half, we definitely saw we played this front two that we kind of always do with Lucas Moura and Harry Kane that doesn't make any sense to me, where Lucas Moura plays as the furthest forward striker and Harry Kane plays just behind him. And Eric Lamela was playing just behind Harry Kane at the tip of the diamond, and they were just all occupying that same space right in front of the Villa back line. And, you know, we did not have the ability to play, like, good interplay because everybody was occupying the same space and making the same runs and trying to do the same things. And, you know, as soon as we spread that out and, you know, let Harry be the focal point for the center backs to occupy and then let those guys run off of him into space, suddenly we were finding a lot more penetration and, you know, making a lot better passes into the box because our movement on the front line was better and smarter. And it all just looked so much more fluid. So it was a lot of things. Anybody else there?
No.
Did you hang up on me?
I think you covered everything.
Brian.
All right, well,
let's jump.
Wheeler Dealer Radio.
Yeah, the new format of Wheeler Dealer Radio. Awkward silences. Brian, you saw. I think we've talked about a lot of our midfield. We haven't talked about the new addition in the midfield. What'd you think of Ndombele?
I thought it was a pretty good first game. You know, you have to kind of allow for, you know, a little bit of an adjustment period. And I think there were some rumblings on Twitter early on in the game that maybe we'd be kind of treating Ndombele sort of like a Pogba light if Spurs kind of struggled and looked like the way we looked in the first 60 minutes with him and the team all year. But, you know, kind of the way it shook out in the end with, you know, once the Eriksen substitution happens and he was basically, or Ndombele was basically the only midfielder that we were playing, the team looked a lot better. And, you know, and he got the goal. And, I mean, I don't think I knew that he had that kind of shot on him. Because that was, I mean, he placed that so good. And he got a little lucky with a slight deflection, but, I mean, I think that was going to be a goal anyway. But, I mean, man, you know, for a debut, I think that's pretty good. I mean, it's only Aston Villa, and he's going to have a much bigger test this week, but I don't know what else you'd want from him.
I mean, isn't that a bit of his game? I've read from a few people that he has a tendency to take some of these kind of pot shots, and it doesn't always work out as well as it did this weekend.
Yeah, but I think that's a pretty good description of them. They're kind of pot shots, and you know the goalkeeping standard in France isn't that great. I wouldn't have said that was a part of his game that I expected him to chip in with. Like, if you'd say that he would get, you know, 5 or something goals like that, I think that's probably, you know, very optimistic. But I mean, based on that shot, that was pretty good. Like, if he has a couple more hits like that, maybe he has a pretty good season.
We have to remember Moussa Dembélé also in his debut match for Spurs came on against a promoted side and scored an equalizer from distance. And we know Moussa Dembélé is not the prolific goal scorer that one moment may have indicated. So, you know, we may need to temper our expectations about what he's going to do in front of goal.
It's funny, if you go back and look at that goal, it's a very Harry Kane goal. Like, kind of across the mouth of the goal, kind of low.
Yeah, like daisy cutter.
Yeah, exactly. Not exactly an indicator of things to come, at least from him.
So, I don't know. I saw a lot of people on Twitter being kind of down on Ndombele. Sorry. How are we saying his name? Ndombele?
I think is how you say it.
Yeah,
I think it's Ndombele.
Anyway, let's just say it. Follow your heart, Ben.
All right, I'm going to follow my heart, and I'm going to say it like a douchebag. But people were a little down on him. You know,
if you're going to say it like a douchebag, you have to say in moose, like certain people.
Yeah, never say in moose. It's the worst nickname I've ever
Yeah, heard. I know. That's my point. It's
not even his name.
I want to be clear. I want to be very clear. This is not mine nor anyone else in the podcast. This is a certain awful individual who will go unnamed at Taco Bell. But continue, Ben.
Anyway, I thought Ndombele was the best player I have ever seen wearing a Spurs shirt. I thought he was so good.
He was excellent. People were just bagging on him because we weren't scoring.
It was amazing. He had fucking sauce for days. I mean,
I was not expecting that.
In the first half, he was very conservative compared to the second half. In the first half, he would move the ball along. He didn't really take a whole lot of risks. In the second half, he started doing the end one mixtape routine a little bit more.
Oh, in the second half, he was doing like 2005 Ronaldo step overs.
And that was great.
Well, it would have been great if we hadn't been down by a goal at that point, but I don't think I fully appreciated it until after the fact.
I really loved the goal celebration, too. Just like a quick little celebration, and then like, all right, everybody back. Let's go. Let's get a second one.
All business.
I thought he was really good. The way he moved the ball around, the way he was, I don't want to say breaking their press, because that's a little too generous to Aston Villa, but just the way that he was just all over the place and in people's faces, and oh man, it was, I don't know about you guys, but like, if last year is the price we had to pay of just not getting Jack Grealish and his like dumb fucking like 90s boy band haircut is the price we had to pay to get like Ndombele and Lo Celso, like fucking good, like, cause fuck that asshole.
Yeah, Ndombele is much better than Jack Grealish. I think that goes without saying.
Hey, you know who didn't get his pocket picked and give up the game winner? Not Ndombele, that's who.
That's true. Eric Lamela did pick Jack Grealish's pocket.
Murdering him.
Well, emotionally murdering him.
Well, it being Eric Lamela, it's always a possibility.
He always chooses some form of violence. Rob, what do you think of Lamela's performance? I'm not sure I was expecting him to start this game, even with all the injuries, but what do you think of Lamela?
You know, so we're recording this on Thursday, so I've obviously listened to every other Tottenham Hotspur podcast talk about this. I heard mixed reviews about him. I didn't think he was very good. I thought he sort of he also was kind of tentative and was taking too long and doing that thing where he holds on to the ball and then doesn't make the right decision. He was working really hard. But whereas you kind of imagine him as being a good choice against a really bunker in defense, he, and maybe it was the positioning and the formation, but he was having a lot of trouble kind of finding guys and picking locks. And it was not, I mean, he, you know, he's a preseason legend, of course. And coming into the game, he had had a pretty good summer. So I think I was expecting a little bit more out of him and was a little, I don't want to say disappointed, but he certainly was not one of the highlights of the first half. So, you know.
I think Eric struggles a little bit when he's kind of asked to be the guy, and he seems much more comfortable as a water carrier when someone like Erickson is being the guy.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's accurate, but
he's not like your go-to creator.
I thought his defensive work is what really stood out to me in this game. And maybe that's not what you – it's probably not what you want to see in a game against Aston Villa. But, like – and maybe it's because their attacks were so few and far between. But it felt like, especially after the goal, like any time Villa tried to get anything going, there was Lamela to make sure it didn't really happen. And
yeah, I mean, Lamela always has a lot of graft and works really hard and defends really well. But I think, you know, we all know that Lamela can be very creative with the ball and play these really – clever through balls and, you know, go on good dribbles and then, like, a cute reverse pass and shit like that. But I think when he's asked to be, like, the primary creative outlet for the team, he seems to overthink and overplay and freeze up a little bit. And I think that's where he was, you know, in the first half, at the tip of the diamond as our, I guess, ostensible number 10. He just didn't seem capable of being that guy who could do that shit. And then once Erickson came on and he became, like, the focal point of a creative hub, I thought Eric Lamela looked much more comfortable and much more at ease, you know, just helping out where he could. And sometimes that was a clever through ball, and sometimes that was a safe pass to a fullback, and sometimes that was, like, a neat dribble, and, you know, he checked back and recycled possession. But I just...
Yeah, and then he goes out and creates the game winner because... Right. He's going back to doing what he seems to enjoy doing almost as much as through balls, which is kicking people and stealing the ball.
Revenge on people who have disrespected his beloved Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. Just like he ended Jack Grealish, he decided to, or just like he ended Jack Wilshere, he decides to end Jack Grealish. That was so delightful.
He really hates people.
Yeah, I mean, let's not. He hates Jack. We should play him against Swansea every week. I'm sure he'd be amazing.
Where's Jack Rodwell these days?
That's a great question, actually.
Is he still a professional athlete? I don't think that's... Ugh.
He's waiting for Moyes to get another job.
That's for a different podcast.
Let's also accept that, you know, he created the game winner not through any particular, you know, beautiful piece of skill and style. You know, he whacked a shot that bounced off two defenders that happened to land at the feet of Harry Kane.
Well, but he also, took the ball off of their midfielder, outside the box.
That's the thing that we know Eric Lamela does well, is press really hard, defend well, and get in people's faces. You know, what I want to see him is play that gently weighted through ball to find Harry Kane behind the defense, and instead,
feather
the ball, he's got heads, and...
Do we think that was a shot, by the way?
That was a
shot. I can't figure out exactly what that was.
Unlike Moussa Sissoko's, cross, that was a shot. So
that was a shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey,
it worked out.
Let's talk about Harry Kane a little bit, since we're on the goals. He looked real sharp. I mean, I thought he took a little bit of time to grow into the game, but certainly in the second half, he looked real good.
Yeah, he had two shots in the first half and then six shots in the second half.
He had a shot in the first half that was that one-on-one with a keeper, who I was mad when he missed that. And like any other striker, you're probably like, whatever. But Harry Kane's usually so clinical. The fact that he didn't even get it on target was really a surprise to me.
And then he had the header in the first half that also didn't go.
Headers are, I don't know, I try to be more charitable about headers.
Again, though, it was a free header. Harry Kane's good in the air. It's just two chances that you'd expect Harry Kane would put away one of them just because he's Harry Kane.
I think we can forgive Harry Kane and the rest of Tottenham for maybe taking a half to grow into the season. But in the second half, Harry and all his compatriots, I thought, looked really sharp and were causing a lot of problems. And seeing those kind of clinical finishes out of Harry was real, real nice to see, especially in the month of August.
You know, we really don't have to overthink it that much. It's like he got to go on vacation and, like, rest. And he's pretty good when he's not injured and fat and exhausted.
Rob, you say that, but I went on vacation last week, and I can promise you I've been terrible at work this week. So, you know, it's a bit of a
trouble. Did you come back fatter than when you left?
Oh, shit. Shots fired on Wheeler Dealer Radio.
I mean, it's vacation. You're supposed to come back fatter. If you didn't do nothing but drink and eat your way through a foreign city, then you did your vacation wrong. So the fact that Harry Kane come back looking like this, like, chiseled, abbed, sun-kissed, beautiful Adonis rather than, like, the fat sack of ham he was last season is a miracle. That's not what vacations are for.
Well, we all know that Harry Kane is a weirdo, and the only thing stopping him is injury and exhaustion. Otherwise, he's just a conditioning cyborg who doesn't do anything except score goals and inhale air through his mouth,
which is always open.
How much of his honeymoon do you think he spent on the training ground?
I don't think a lot. I think he just got up at like 4 in the morning and ran laps on the beach.
He probably just had sex 4 times a night, and that
probably just like he was on The Bachelorette. That's probably what he was doing. I think there's one more individual performance that we haven't talked about that deserves to be singled out. Brian, what do you think of Kyle Walker-Peters?
I thought he was pretty good, actually. I'm definitely a Kyle Walker-Peters skeptic, but he looked fine in this match, I thought. Granted, we're playing against Villa, and he didn't really get challenged too much by their wide players. But he looked like he's someone that can play Premier League minutes, which I think is kind of what we knew about him. I'm much more nervous for us to utilize him against a team that's actually good. But, you know, especially in the second half where the midfield kind of changed and the shape kind of covered in behind him, he was able to push a lot higher up the pitch, and he did a lot of decent attacking things.
Yeah, I thought he was, I mean, again, you know, I've been saying this a lot on this podcast, it's Villa, but I thought he was a lot more assured than I was expecting, and I know we were kind of kicking their ass, so they didn't really attack us all that much, but I was still a little surprised they weren't targeting him, because if I was Villa, that's what I would have been doing. But I thought he was much better in attack than I sort of remembered him being, although I guess that's what he was doing well when he earned all those Man of the Match awards, but I thought it was promising. You don't want to get carried away with it, but it's certainly, you know, a positive performance you can build on.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was a useful outlet. He held the ball well under pressure. He didn't, like, give a lot of stupid turnovers and, you know, force or allow counters to happen in behind him. You know, he didn't put in, like, a lot of, like, devastating crosses or killer through balls or whatever. But, you know, he moved the ball well in the attacking third. He was never a real liability in possession. I thought he was dangerous and penetrating. I thought it was a good performance. Again, you're right. No one challenged him. I was surprised to see that Villa directed most of their attacks down Danny's side instead of his.
Well, it kind of worked the one time.
Well, we can talk about whose fault that was, because I'm still not convinced it was all on Danny. But
yeah, but if you had to pick one of the two fullbacks who would get torched by Aston Villa, you would not have picked Danny Rose. But
right.
He was, at least in the first half, way worse than Walker-Peters was.
Yeah, I mean, that was also a really dumb goal, to be fair to Danny, but
I mean, there were more than one sequence where he kind of got beat.
Yes, you're right.
Rose got wrecked a lot.
Yeah.
And that was a little concerning. I mean, I don't know. You hope that, again, it's the first game of the year. We're sort of playing a new type of system, so it's probably going to take a little bit of adjustment.
You just hope Ryan Sessegnon is ready to come in and be our new Gareth Bale left back.
It's going to be a while, but here's hoping. I mean, it was a good performance. I mean, you got to, you know, you kind of wish Tottenham had blown the doors off of them like Liverpool and City did in their openers. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think 3-1 was a totally deserved scoreline for Spurs.
If they scored the goals in reverse order, it would have looked
clearly,
fine.
Clearly.
I mean, and also, like, City and Norwich didn't, like, really blow the door, or sorry, City and Liverpool didn't really blow the doors off West Ham and Norwich, like, that impressively. I mean,
City, I feel like
was
City
up
sort of did, but
West Ham. I mean, again, they made hard work of the first half. West Ham had a good first half, you know, and then Jack Wilshere went off hurt and it all fell apart because that's what happened since 2019.
Who could have seen that coming?
But again, I thought like Norwich battled pretty well against Liverpool. Like, you know, their defense isn't great, but like, you know, they lost 4-1. That might be harsh on them. I mean, you know, by expected goals, we had a bigger win margin than the other two teams. And I know, you know, that doesn't count in terms of scoreline, but, you know, we all won, so now let's look at some of the underlying metrics. And I think, you know, we played as well as anyone,
considered. This is anecdotal, maybe not super helpful, but, like, I think certainly Norwich created more threatening opportunities than Villa did. And that's comparing apples to oranges, but I think that's a good point. Like, I think Norwich was unlucky to not get more out of what they did, and Villa was probably lucky to get as much as they did out of what they did. So,
I mean, it's been said elsewhere, but I think Liverpool gave up like 7 shots in the first half at Anfield, which is more than they've given up in a long time. But of course, they also built a big lead, so like maybe they don't attack as much when they're up.
And City gave up a lot of really good chances. They gave up shots from the center of the box that Allison had to do some work to prevent them from being goals. So, you know, both teams showed a bit more weakness than the score lines reflect, but they're both still really good.
And it's the first game of the season, and nothing matters.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham had 2 really good chances in the center of the box. So City beat them on expected goals 2.4-1, and we beat Villa 2.6-0.8. So, you know, slightly better in our favor in that match. And Liverpool won 1.6-0.9. You know, City also had a penalty, and Liverpool also had a known goal. But, you know, from open play, neither of those teams had, like, the all-conquering performances that their scorelines would suggest. You know, whereas we also had as good, if not better, a performance, you know, in terms of the shots we created and the chances we gave up. And because we're Spurs, we made it look like insanely hard work, and we were lucky to come out with a win.
We got our Tottenham back. Let's use this natural opportunity to shift the conversation. Comfortable-ish 3-1 win against Villa in the books. Now we go to the Etihad next week. We're playing Manchester City. Second game of the year. Brian, how are you feeling about this?
Not very well. I mean,
is that based on facts, or is that just based on...
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Yeah, you just being a Tottenham fan and the trauma associated with that.
No, I think City's really good, and I think they're still pretty clearly a step above us. You know, I think Aguero didn't play at the weekend. Fernandinho didn't play at the weekend.
Are there any serious injuries there, or is it just fitness? And
Fernandinho might not be totally fit after the summer. I'm not certain, but Aguero was at least on the bench, so I don't think there was anything wrong with him. I think City are still the best team in the league, and to play them early in the season at their place, it's going to be a difficult game. I wouldn't be surprised if we went in there and we got a point or, you know, even a win. Like, that would be great, but I think it's much more likely that City comes away with a victory in this weekend.
Wow, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's really decisive analysis based on only my feelings and everything, but you know, I think they're just better than us.
Well, I think so what I always think confounds me with these.
This is when it starts.
What always confounds me with these games is I feel like one or both coaches always try something goofy. And I feel like generally we don't come out well out of that, given that Pep is probably the best coach of all time. But it's worked before. It worked really well for us at one point last year, but I don't know.
Let's not forget that we lost that game.
Well, I mean, we played really well against them the second time. We beat them in the Champions League over two legs. I mean, I would feel a lot better about this. I would feel a lot better about any game if Son was healthy, or not healthy, if Son was eligible to play. But we'll get him back next week, thankfully. I don't know. I feel like it's hard to sort of call this, because I think we're going to see a lot of weird shit, and I just don't know how we're going to approach it.
I mean, certainly if they kind of concede the same sort of shots and are as lightweight in midfield as they looked against West Ham, we will have opportunities. We probably should have done some research and preparation. We should all probably know if Fernandinho is ready to play in this match. But I mean, if they're going to
Fernandinho's fit, but I think they might go with Rodri anyway. I don't know if you saw Pep's quotes about how Rodri is a proper defensive midfielder because he has a normal white guy haircut and no tattoos.
I just want to thank Pep Guardiola right now for probably being racist and not wanting to sign Ndombele and going for a clean cut all España boy Rodri instead of our glorious new midfielder that we've got. And I just want to, you know, racism's terrible, but I'm glad it worked for us this one time.
Amen. So I don't know anything about Rodri other than the West Ham game, but I thought that guy sucked and we're going to smash him.
He was very good at Atleti last year.
Well, he was very shitty at West Ham. So,
I mean, I just think if you put out, if we have to run out the same midfield that we did, you know, against Aston Villa, I still think that that's a lot better than the midfield that West Ham put out there, and they managed to have some stretches where they were able to get some penetration and get deep into the city box. So, I think we can do that.
That's a good point, and it's not like we don't.
Video says that Ndombele really likes playing against City, so
that is true.
We know he can do it. I mean, we know he can do that. So it's not like theoretical of how's Ndombele going to play against City. We've seen it. He's done well.
For those of you listening at home, he played against them in the Champions League for Lyon, and if you haven't seen his highlights from that, you can spend a worse 10 minutes than watching them because he wrecked some shit.
Sum it up, he was the key to their victory at the Etihad. Ben, I believe, he had a pass to Depay in that game that ended your marriage, if I'm not mistaken. It was so sexy.
Oh, God, it was so sexy.
It
just cut through lines and lines and then curled.
But it's at that diagonal. Oh, my God, it's so good.
It was beautiful.
And even in, they got whooped 5-1 by City back in France, and I think even in that game he was very good. So, you know, time to show Pep what he's missing. I don't know. I think we could win. I'd never bet money on us beating Pep Guardiola, but it's happened. It could happen.
It all
depends on who's going to play.
Well, so we all agree Lo Celso's at best on the bench, right?
Probably, but I think if Eriksen and Vertonghen both play, which I think is pretty likely. I mean, so Vertonghen wasn't in the squad this past match, and it was raised a lot of eyebrows. But it sounds like everything's fine between them, and it was just Pochettino being a crazy cult leader.
Yeah, it sounds like he was sending weird messages to the team, which is, I don't know, all the beat reporters are acting like this is normal, and I mean, it's not like Poch doesn't send weird messages to the team, but he usually doesn't bench for Tongan, but
I don't know. Just bench him, but leave him out of the squad entirely. It was alarming, but I'm sure he'll start, and Eriksen will start, and we'll play our best team, and we'll win.
I actually don't think he's going to play weird games with, like, I think anyone who's fit and not about to be sold is going to play in this game.
Yeah, because he wants to win it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, unless we are like on the verge of selling Eriksson, and as of Thursday night in America, there has been no news on Eriksson about anything since the transfer window. I just, you know, I can't see us, you know, not putting every bullet we have in the chamber.
Yeah, I mean, even if we are going to sell Eriksson, we might as well use him one last time to beat Man City before we send him on his way.
Yeah, drive up
and
that
price.
And if
he happens to get injured and that ruins the deal, then, you know, so be it.
You hate to see it.
I think the main concern for this game is going to be what we do about our fullbacks, because there's not anything we can do. We have to play the two guys that we played against Aston Villa.
There's a chance Aurier could start.
Oh, is he over his broken wrist?
I mean, I don't know if he's like actually fit, but he's in training.
So I mean, I don't know that makes me feel any more confident.
I mean, but I think what you said is most. I think that is the most likely scenario in which we're going to see Rose and Kyle Walker-Peters, but.
Yeah, I feel like Kyle Walker-Peters played well enough against Villa, and Aurier is enough of a wild card that he'll probably give the job to KWP.
I mean, and I think we'll see Sissoko, like, protecting KWP a little bit, which probably isn't the worst use in the world for him, honestly.
I think I saw a stat on Twitter this week. I think it was probably from Who Scored. But since Serge Aurier moved to the Premier League, no one else in the league has had more foul throw-ins than him.
Yeah, because almost no one else commits a foul throw.
Yeah, and it's like 7. Like, some stupid number. Like, a number that you would be upset about if, like, someone playing U12s had it. Like, you just be like, how?
If it's a non-zero number, it's bad.
I mean, I think he had his first foul throw in his first game at Spurs, and everyone was like, what did we sign?
Yeah.
Well, good thing that was an isolated incident that was just weird and wouldn't repeat itself.
And it's not like the Premier League has VAR now, so, I mean, he probably won't be a defensive liability at all.
Never. Serge Aurier would never give away a decisive penalty in a match.
Ugh.
It's just so unlike him.
Jesus.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like we're fucked, but we're winning the league. And in order to win the league, we're going to have to beat Man City at the Etihad. So that's what we're going to do. And I feel pretty good about that.
I mean, to be fair, we don't actually have to do that, but...
No, we do. We know
we
will. We
almost assuredly do.
Had Liverpool actually done that, they would have won the league, so...
So that answers your question.
It sounds like that's precisely what one needs to do to win the league.
Well, for us, it's not going to be the make or break, is it?
Well, we're going to have to do that and then also not lose...
Well, yeah, and have to make up the other 25 points.
Well, when Burnley unexpectedly win the league this year, Ben, we're all going to be kicking ourselves when we finish 5 points behind them.
That would be so us.
So let's, I guess the transfer drama around Eriksson has developed since our last podcast. Let's talk about that a little bit. Brian, do you think, I don't know, where do you think Eriksson is at the end of the transfer window, and does that involve a new contract for Tottenham Hotspur?
I think he's probably still here. It just doesn't look like anything big is going to happen with Real Madrid. And quite frankly, I mean, if you're Daniel Levy, I would think that there's a premium on selling him now after the close of the window in England. So,
I mean, probably not, right? Like, Lo Celso was always going to be your Eriksson replacement. There was never going to... I mean, we're not signing Paulo Dybala. It's not really going to happen.
But yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, and I guess if you'd rather get something than nothing.
I mean, that's my point. If you're Daniel Levy, do you want to keep him for a whole year and let him walk? Or do you want to get like $25 million for him so, shit, at least you got something for him?
Yeah, I mean, I'd still want to keep him. Because to me, if you... You know, if you watch that first game, you can just look at this team and you're like, oh, this team with Christian Eriksen, that's the difference between, you know, maybe winning a trophy this year or not. You know, so if it were me, I'd be doing everything I could to hold on to him and to get him a new deal and to, you know, even if it was just like a 2 or 3 season deal, just so that he didn't walk on a free and you had like you know, a gentleman's agreement like we did with Bale or Modric that, you know, if Real Madrid come in for him that they'll sell, that would be, I'd be much happier with that. But I think he's probably just going to run down his deal and then, like, go to Juventus or something.
Yeah, because there are no rules in world football. So clearly Juventus is just calling him and being like, don't sign a new deal.
Well, Juventus probably can't afford their phone bills the way their season's going. But I'm sure some team is saying, we will sign you on a nice fat contract if we don't have to pay a transfer fee for you.
I mean, Juventus can just say, look, we paid £400,000 a week to Aaron fucking Ramsey. Imagine what you'll get paid. You just run it down.
I mean, Juventus has acted pretty poor right now, so.
But, I mean, you know, I just, my thing is I don't know that he is any more likely to go to Real Madrid next summer than he is right now. I mean,
you know, I agree with you there.
I mean, the hope that he has to have is that Zidane doesn't play well and they get in a new coach that would want him there. And
very possible. Or a new coach who has to agree to Perez wanting him there.
Perez.
Yeah, which is much more likely, I think.
So, I mean, you know, as much as I would love us to just pay him whatever his number is, like, and just be done with it, and he's a Spurs player for the next 4 or 5 years, it really doesn't look like what's going to happen here. Even though he's said all the right things for the most part, and he apparently continues to show up at training, and as we saw, when he's on the pitch, he works hard and he does things. I mean, he's being professional about all this, but
he also said, I want to go do something else.
Yeah, so. And so why wouldn't we take him on his word? Like,
probably,
I mean,
he wants to go somewhere else.
Yeah,
like if no one else wants him and won't pay him, then you know he'll maybe stick around, but it sure seems like in his best interest to run down his deal and then go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think he stands to make so much. I think the only way he stays at Spurs is if he's like, you know what, fuck it, I don't want to risk it. If they make an agreement to sell me to Real Madrid, fine, but I'll just take the improved pay raise. And like, if he's just like, fuck it, I like it here, and it's enough. But that's the only way he's staying. If he just wants to maximize his salary, I think the Bosman is too much. Like,
yeah, and I mean, you know what? There's always a possibility that he runs down his contract and he re-signs with Spurs after looking around for a month and not seeing anything there. I think it's a pretty slim opportunity, but
in the meantime, he makes the team a whole hell of a lot better.
Oh, God. I mean, Spurs have one of the most terrifying attacking set of I don't even know what the acronym for them would be, but if we have Eriksen this year, Jesus Christ, that's a scary fucking lineup Spurs can roll out there.
And he doesn't have to play every single minute of every single game. Well, judging by the first batch, he does, but he won't.
Other players won't. Dele won't.
Yeah, well, yeah. Someone will always be hurt because it's Spurs, but in theory, with him around plus the new additions, plus actually getting some other guys healthy, like suddenly there are more midfield options than you can shake a stick at, as opposed to last season where everything was held together with Band-Aids and Moussa Sissoko.
I mean, I think what's really weird to me is looking at this team right now, I think we'd miss Eriksen, but I also feel like we could cope without him. I mean, if you have Dele, if you have Lo Celso, if he's half the player that we all think he's going to be, I mean, damn, that for something I was scared of for a very long time, replacing Eriksen sure looks a lot more plausible now than it did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to look different because even none of the guys on the squad can do quite what Eriksen does. I mean, Lo Celso is a very good player who is very versatile and can do a lot of things, but he's not like the pure attacking midfielder that Eriksen is. He might even be a better goal scorer, which sounds kind of crazy, but like he's not a metronomic passer. He doesn't have assists from all angles the way that Eriksen does. So you'd be getting Eriksen's production from a combination of more than one player.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, without Eriksen, we're probably looking at all of Ndombele, Lo Celso, and Dele Alli in midfield, or, you know, somewhere behind the strikers. And, you know, all three of them we know can play through balls. You know, we've seen Dele play those little cute scoop passes over the top. You know, they all have creative aspects to their game, but we're going to need all three of them to basically share Eriksen's creative load between them.
Well, there's nothing wrong with...
It's a big ask.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with, like, Eriksen leaves and we're going to have to change the way we play and spread that around a little bit. I mean, Eriksen is a very singular player, and it's probably unreasonable to expect us to get just a like-for-like replacement.
And it might even be some weird, like, Ewing theory magic where you can't just, like, mark Eriksen out of the game and suddenly we can't attack because you now have three players who can spread that around. And if you try to mark Dele out of the game, then Lo Celso, you know, has a little bit more space, or Ndombele has a little bit more space, and it's just a little bit harder to key in on our weaknesses. But at the same time, yeah, like, Eriksen's ability to be the creative hub, to be a goal scorer, to do a lot of pressing work, and to just sort of be everywhere is not something that really anyone that we can get will directly replace.
Right. I mean, Coach Coutinho has had a lot of different tactical setups over the last 5 years. You know, we've had to compensate for a lot of different injuries and tweak how we play. But the one thing that has been pretty constant over those 5 years is that Eriksen is going to play every match that he's fit, and all of our attacking play is going to go through Christian Eriksen. And, you know, he has been remarkably healthy in his time at Spurs, and we haven't really ever had to play for too long a stretch without him. And that's the one thing that Pochettino has never really had to figure out how to do, is how to play a game where he doesn't have Christian Eriksen to just make magic happen. And I think if we lose him, it is going to take a lot to replace that. You know, even though we have, like Rob said, multiple players who can do it, and, you know, that maybe makes us stronger in the sense that all of our creativity isn't bundled up in one human. But, I mean, we have just relied so much on Eriksen for so long that I think Spurs fans don't even necessarily realize how key he is to everything we've done under Pochettino. And it's definitely scary. This is where you guys talk.
Well,
there's a lot of uncertainty there.
I mean, we're going to find out, and I could very easily see it's just not selling him, and we're going to let that guy walk and just fucking ball out for the rest of this year. But
yeah, and there's only so much that we can do to make a team come in for him. And especially if he only wants to go to Real Madrid or Atletico, like, if they're not interested, then that's it. Like, there's not a whole lot of other options now that the English window is closed. So if it's not really worth it for us to accept a crappy offer for him, keep him and see what we can do with him.
I mean, if we keep him, we could win the league. I mean, that midfield is ridiculous.
And he can go do whatever the fuck he wants. He can go back to Middlefart.
Look, if we keep Eriksen this season and win the Premier League, he can do whatever he wants, and I will give him my blessing. I do not care how much money we lose. I don't care if he doesn't sign a contract. But
I mean, I think that is a more valid argument than some Spurs fans are giving credence to. Like, I don't love losing Eriksen, but shit. That's going to be a real good team this year. And if we had, like, Dybala money to throw around, like, who fucking cares if we lose out on, like, $30 million for Eriksen?
Yeah, another deep run in the Champions League pays a lot of that off. So, whatever.
I mean, look, if we keep Eriksen, we're talking about a lineup that puts Lucas Moura, the hero of the Champions League, as a bench player. Dele Alli, who has been one of the best players over the last 5 years or so, as a bench player. You know, like, we have Eric Lamela, obviously, is going to be a bench player. But, like, our team is so good that we're marginalizing some of the, like, key figures over the last several seasons. And I mean, that's unreal for Spurs. We've never had guys of that quality. you know, I mean, I know we say this every season as we get better and better, looking at how amazing our benches are, but like being able to start a lineup of Son and Kane and Eriksen and Lo Celso and Dembele, like, and then have these other guys in reserve, that's like a Man City-esque squad. Like, yes, our fullbacks suck. I'm like, let's not look at the man behind the curtain. But forgetting all of that, everything that's good is really good. And I think we're going to win the league.
I mean, honestly, that's one of... I mean, I don't think there's ever a good time to play City, but one of the things I'm a little sad about is, like, I kind of wish our first game against a team like City was a few weeks later once, you know, Lo Celso's gotten in the team. We know what the fuck we're doing with Eriksen one way or another. Dele's healthy. Son's back. Like, I kind of wish we'd be going at Pep with, like, you know, sort of all of our gears in motion. And I know it works the other way around. Like, they're still getting guys healthy. Rodri's not fully integrated in the team. But I don't know. It's I'm a little disappointed because I'd really like to see these two teams go sort of just at each other at full strength.
Also, that's a lie. Hasn't had enough time to break everybody yet.
Yeah, that's a lie. I want to see us go at the full strength. I hope City just, like, steps on a bunch of rakes the night before they play us. So...
So we might not beat City, but we are going to win the league. I like how that works out.
No, but we have to beat City to win the league.
I'm not following, Brian.
So we don't win the league, it's because we didn't beat City. Got it.
Correct, yes.
That's all right.
So yeah, we're feeling good. Anyone have any final thoughts before we leave our loyal listeners?
Gonna win the league.
Going to win the league. Brian, are we going to win the league?
Probably not, but I'm just real happy soccer's back. It's been such a long summer.
Yeah, it's nice to have it back. Rob, are Spurs going to win the league?
No, but we might finish ahead of Liverpool.
That would be nice.
I hear Liverpool are canceled.
Oh, definitely they've been canceled. Yeah,
they've been canceled. And also, like, we haven't even gotten to gush about Giovanni Lo Celso yet. Like, actually seeing him play.
He's going to be so good, you guys. Like,
that's going to be kind of cool.
He's going to be so good. I'm so excited to see him play for Spurs. Oh, it's just, oh. It's going to be so good. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian Ashlock, where can people find you on the web tubes?
On Twitter, at Brian_Ashlock. That's Brian with a Y.
Robert, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me not on Facebook, because I don't have Facebook.
Okay.
Or Reno Wallabout on Twitter.
Fair enough. And you can find me on Twitter.com at Skipjack0079. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. For Ben, for Brian, for Rob, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.